Okay, welcome to The Good Robot Andy's Season 1, Episode 12.
Can I ask my a name question?
You can ask a question.
When do we become Season 2? Just checking.
When will we become Season 2?
Yeah.
I guess when we have a massive break.
Okay.
Where we can't be bothered to
do it. Do carry on. Yeah.
Or possibly never. Or possibly at the same date as we did the first episode of season
now,
one.
Now, I quite like the idea of that, actually. Yeah. So when
that would be year two, but you know, it's too late.
We're talking semantics.
To call it
now.
Year.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Go on then. Carry on. Sorry, I interrupted you.
Season one, episode 12 of this podcast, on which we talk about movies with lots of spoilers. My name is Andy Balaam. That's what I was doing. My name is Andy Balaam, and this is
Andy Cockerill,
the troublemaker. And the film that we're talking about today is
Me and Earl and the Dying Girl.
And I think probably. So this is the bit where I tell you what the film is about without having seen it or heard anything about it.
Okay.
But based purely on its title.
Yeah.
I think it's a bit like American Pie, in that it's, you know, it's a hilarious and fascinating insight into the American culture, especially around, you know, the antics of college students.
That's okay. So that's in the ballpark. It's in the ballpark, right. But it's definitely not American Pie.
I'm underwhelmed.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Well, I should try and convince you that it's worth seeing.
All right. Well, let's do that. But first, let's have a look at some feedback we received on the previous episode.
Have we had some feedback?
We have a piece of feedback.
Ooh,
listeners.
Exciting.
If you give us feedback, we'll talk about it.
We will.
That will be your reward.
Yes.
We got feedback on the bonus episode we did, in which we discussed for slightly too long Star Wars The Force Awakens.
Yes.
And we said we liked it.
We did.
And we got some feedback from Farsi, who says he's seen it 4 times and it gets better every time.
Yeah.
But his main criticism of us was that we didn't discuss the important question, which in my opinion is absolutely not the important question about the film. But it's the important question that it's the important meta question.
Right.
If you've had enough of talking about the film.
Yeah.
And you want to talk about something that isn't the film, the question is, who is Rey? And I guess what he means by that is she like someone's daughter or something?
Right.
So
I mean
go.
Okay, so in the canon of Star Wars, you know, Star Wars is all about family, isn't it?
Yeah.
If we take episode 4 onwards, because of course there are no other episodes of Star Wars, and because we don't count the other ones.
Perhaps someday someone will fill in episodes 1 to 3.
Maybe they will. I believe someone made some fan fiction episodes. But anyway, if we go from episode 4, I think that, you know, it's all about family. So I think Rey has got to be related to somebody. There's a lot of speculation about this, that she's either Luke's daughter or she's Obi-Wan's granddaughter. Now that would be interesting. Now the reason why people are saying it's Obi-Wan's granddaughter is because Ewan McGregor recorded some dialogue. You know, the Force dream that she has, the vision that she has when she touches Luke's lightsaber.
Yeah.
Ewan McGregor recorded some dialogue for that. That, I mean, I can't actually make out much dialogue in that vision at all. It was just sort of really fantastic jumble of noise and images. It's really well done. But he recorded some dialogue for it. So I think that it could be his granddaughter, in which case, being a Jedi, he's been a very naughty boy. I'm kind of going with that school of thought. What are your thoughts on it?
Right. My thoughts on it are, I think it would be a cop-out. If she's related to someone, so I hope she isn't. I think that it's ridiculous that the only people we've ever met in the whole story who have any force are all in the same family, practically. Not all of them, but you know what I mean. It's clear that in this universe there are other families that have force.
Force-sensitive.
I think it would be
beings,
better.
Yes.
I think it would be better if she was from a different family.
I agree. Like, I think it would be too.
They're doing the whole thing again. A lot of people have said, "Oh, it was just episode 4 redone," and I don't agree with that. I don't think it was at all.
No. But,
the main reason why elements. I don't want her to be related. Yeah, it has a lot of elements. It's like, it has a lot of elements, but it's not the same story at all. And so I want that not to be the main part of the story, that suddenly she discovers she's related to someone, because that's just too much already been done.
Yes, I think so. I agree. So is that Fozzie's feedback? Can we move on?
He also said some stuff about George Lucas.
Oh yeah, what did he say about Lucas?
He said he shouldn't be allowed to do any of the other films. But I really think we needn't worry about that. Disney have seen what happened. They know what they're doing.
Yeah.
They ain't going to let him anywhere near
it. I think that's absolutely true. He has no creative input at all. He sold the business. He has, you know, a sort of executive, you know, not even an executive producer hat on in regard to how much influence he has. So, you know, I've heard things where he's complained and moaned about The Force Awakens, and the man has no self-awareness at all, basically. He has no clue at all.
With football managers and things, I feel like people are often fired far too early. You know, you can't possibly turn around the fortunes of a large organization in a few months and then just get fired because they didn't win a few games, you know, when there's a lot of randomness in it. But when someone has just comprehensively failed to do anything of any value, why on earth would you have them on board for the next thing that's the same?
Yeah, there is no reason to do it. There's no reason.
And they won't. So there's no need to worry about it.
No. What's interesting is that I read recently that Lucas contacted Lawrence Kasdan, who's the man who co-wrote The Force Awakens and also wrote The Empire Strikes Back and co-wrote Return of the Jedi. He contacted him before the Disney approach. And they were actually talking to Mark Hamill, Carrie Fisher, and Harrison Ford about coming back and doing more. And I wonder if at that point that Disney got wind of those talks that were going on and thought, okay, we need to get involved in this in some capacity.
Because it might be good, you mean?
Well, if Disney make it, it might be good.
No, I mean, they thought there's some chance of this being good. So.
Yeah, I don't think they thought that. I think maybe they thought we need to jump on this and...
Oh, I see. Hang on. What stage of the process was this?
So,
was this after they bought the rights?
No, this was afterwards. So, no, this was before. So the talks between Lucas and Lawrence Kasdan and Lucas and the leads of the original Star Wars, so Carrie Fisher, Mark Hamill and Harrison Ford, were going on before the Disney buyout.
So I'm not sure what you're saying. You're saying that Disney are so altruistic that they thought, oh no, a bad film's going to be made. We better step in and stop it being made.
No, I don't think that at all. But I think that they, you know, Hollywood being the thing that it is, which is actually quite a small place, they would have gotten wind of something happening with Star Wars and thought, we can make a lot of money out of this.
Yeah, if we just keep George out of it.
Yeah, exactly. Which I agree
awesome.
With, by the way.
Yeah, well, it works.
Yeah.
It's a good film, and a lot of people I speak to have seen it several times, and I basically feel jealous.
It gets better.
I'd really like to watch it again.
I've seen it twice, and the second time I watched it, I enjoyed it even more than the first time. Anyway, we're digressing madly.
Farsi's seen it 4 times.
Okay.
And that was Farsi had seen it 4 times on the 14th of January.
Good God.
So who knows how many times he's seen it
now. I would quite happily watch it again today. Yeah.
Yeah, I would.
Quite happily. Anyway,
anyway.
It's It's getting late, and we should crack on.
That's not even
on.
That film. Right, do the film.
We should crack on. Okay, so today's film that we're going to discuss is a movie called Me and Earl and the Dying Girl. This came out last year. It is a quirky comedy in the style of Wes Anderson.
Wes Anderson of...
Hang
on, let me get this right.
Yep.
Of The Royal Tenenbaums.
Yes.
Great film.
Yes.
A couple of others that are really enjoyable, but you're not really sure why they're there. like the one with Bill Murray.
The Life Aquatic.
Which is entertaining, but you're really not sure.
Yeah, I think Life Aquatic is a little bit weak, but
and yeah. There's the one with the two kids on the island.
Moonrise Kingdom, which I really
Moonrise
enjoyed.
Moonrise Kingdom was great.
I really enjoyed that.
Highly recommended. Listeners, if you haven't seen The Royal Tenenbaums, or Moonrise
Kingdom. Well, in fact, if you haven't seen anything by Wes Anderson, you're missing out.
You have to let it flow over you.
Yeah. Wes Anderson's films exist in a reality that's not quite our own. Would that be a correct thing to say?
Yeah, and I think one of the real pleasures of watching them is the way the camera is arranged perfectly. Everything's lined up perfectly.
Everything's framed absolutely perfectly.
And it happens in front of you. And that's very deliberately kind of over-framed.
So, there's a lot of that in this
anyway.
Film. There's a lot of that in this film. We should discuss a Wes Anderson film in the future. But anyway, this film is directed by a gentleman called Alfonso Gomez Rejon. And it stars a bunch of people I'd never heard of before. Apart from, there's a guy called Nick Offerman, who's in Parks and Recreation as...
Which one is
it? Ron Swanson.
Ron Swanson, who he vies very much for first place as my favourite character from Parks.
Yeah, me
and
too. I like Ron. But he plays me in the title of Me. He plays his father, and he doesn't play him as a Ron Swanson type. He plays him as a guy who's perhaps done too many recreational drugs, but doesn't do them anymore, but is a little bit damaged because of it. And he plays a very funny guy who's basically doing a lot of very healthy food, but you know that in his past he's probably done some pretty heavy stuff. So he's very funny, Nick Offerman. So anyway, I'm digressing slightly. So this film is about so the me is a guy called Greg. And he is friends at high school with every single sort of cliche, clique or group. So he's friends with the goths. He's friends with the jocks. He's friends with the geeks. And he does this because he doesn't.
It's nice to re-enter that well-ordered world.
Yes.
Of American high school cliques.
He does this because he doesn't really want to get particularly close to anyone. So he's not really close friends with anyone in particular.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day he comes home and his mum is really upset and she says, one of your friends, called Rachel, is very sick. She's got leukemia. And I think you should go and be her friend. I think you should go and talk to her about what she's going through because she needs someone.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, no way. There's not a chance. You know, he even starts rolling around like on the floor like a sulky toddler, you know, saying, I don't want to go. I don't want to go and talk to this woman who's got leukemia. She says, you're going. And that's that. So he goes over there. You know,
so he's kind of, this is kind of the opposite of, like, he's been protecting himself from emotional engagement.
Yes, and now he's got to emotionally engage with someone who is who has leukemia, who is very sick. And, you know, initially they're kind of a little bit frosty and then that gradually thaws out and then they become very good friends. And then there's this other part of his life that's completely separate from his college life and his home life. He has a friendship with this guy called Earl, who he calls his co-worker. And they make spoof versions of famous films, but they give them scatological titles.
I think I've seen a trailer for this or something. This is ringing... The calling him a colleague, that rings a bell.
Yeah, that's his co-worker, yeah.
Sorry, yeah, co-worker.
And Earl's a black kid from the other side of town. He's from a pretty rough area, but, you know, he has a pretty happy home life. And they make these really quite funny... scatologically titled versions of of blockbuster movies.
What does scatological mean?
Means of toilet humour variety. And in that respect, it's very reminiscent of the kind of stuff that Michel Gondry, who made Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. I don't know if you've seen
another
that.
Quirky comedy.
Another quirky comedy. And also the work of Spike Jones, who made Being John Malkovich.
Now you're talking.
So, you know, we're in the ballpark of the kind of stuff that Charlie Kaufman has written in the past. And also
Malkovich,
in the ballpark.
Malkovich.
Yes. Malkovich. We're also in the ballpark of Wes Anderson. So, you know, it's it's quite, you know.
It sounds like a good place to
it's
be.
It's hitting well above its weight, this film. So Greg strikes up a relationship with Rachel, and you know they get on pretty well. She finds his quirkiness endearing, and he opens up to her in a way that he's never opened up to anybody before.
Mm-hmm.
But he's supposed to be studying for college, and that all just gets binned in favour of supporting her.
So it sort of becomes a bit obsessive almost.
It does become obsessive, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And there's a very, very powerful moment quite late on in the film. This is very spoilerific, by the way. People probably know
that's
that right. already if they've listened.
It's a spoilerific podcast.
There's a very,
that's what you're here for.
There's a very powerful moment later on in the film when she says to him that I'm stopping the treatment. I can't stand it anymore. I'm just sick all the time. And it's not working. And he becomes really angry. Mm-hmm. Really, really angry with her. And she says, you know, this is my decision. It's my life and you should respect it.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of puts a bit of a fracture in their relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But he, on the way to the prom, he goes to the hospital where she is. And he shows her a film that he and Earl made for her. You know, mm-hmm. sort of a film that he made about her, projected onto the hospital wall with one of these tiny little projectors that's about the size of a cigarette packet. Fantastic mm-hmm. little thing. And that's one of the most powerfully moving pieces of film that I've seen in years and years. You know, it's such a simple thing to do. And then as the film is finishing, she sort of starts choking and she has a bit of a seizure. And then she dies a couple of days later, and it's mm-hmm. It's a strange. I wouldn't call it a little film. I mean, it's probably quite sort of modestly budgeted, but weirdly affecting in a way that very few films are. It's also very funny. It's very, very, very sharply scripted.
Is it low budget?
I would say it's probably medium budgeted. I mean, it's got a good soundtrack budget, so there's some really great soundtrack music on it.
Mm-hmm.
Music by Brian Eno, among others. Mm-hmm. So I think they've used some of his things like music for films and stuff like that.
It sounds like it's going for it. It knows it's going for. Is that the soundtrack thing is making me think of. I can never remember the name of it. The film with the scary rabbit thing.
Oh, Donnie Darko.
Donnie Darko. I feel like it sounds like it's going for that audience.
I would say so. Although I was just trying to think if the audience for Donnie Darko really still exists.
Or, that's people like me.
And me as well, yeah. Who like this
movie. I still exist.
Yeah, I think I do.
I saw you. A few weeks ago.
So, but what Rachel does for Greg, because she, you know, before she gets really sick, she finds out that his studies have slipped because he's been mm-hmm. visiting her. She writes an email to the college that he was going to apply to say, this is why his grades have slipped. You know, I'm the reason why this has happened, and I think you should reconsider.
Mm-hmm.
You should take this into account and give him a place anyway, because he's a good kid and he's smart. It's a very, very good film, and it did pretty well last year. It was critically pretty well acclaimed. I mean, it's got an 83% rating on Rotten Tomatoes, which is good. I'll just read you the consensus, which says, beautifully scripted and perfectly cast. Me and Earl and the Dying Girl is a coming-of-age movie with uncommon charm and insight.
Mm-hmm.
Which is pretty good.
Yeah.
So
the first thing that I'm thinking about, this isn't necessarily a criticism, but
yes.
It sounds to me from the first thing you said to describe it, it sounded like there weren't really any surprises after that. You know, you're not surprised that they strike up a relationship. You're not surprised that, you know, it starts off frosty and then gets, you know, and then you're not surprised that it's all sad at the end.
Well, I was just thinking of a thing that happens near the beginning of the film where he has a voiceover and he says, you know, I'm going to see my friend Rachel, who's very sick, but she's not going to die. Everything's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. And he keeps that pretense up throughout the film. And even though you know that he's probably lying, you still want to believe that she's not mm-hmm. going to die.
Mm-hmm.
Because the relationship that they have is very strong. You know, it goes from nothing to something.
Mm-hmm.
So no, there are no surprises in this film.
That's not really what it's about.
Though. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, really, you know, she's the plot MacGuffin.
Mm-hmm.
It's about his journey from being a guy who's too cool for school to a guy who actually opens himself up and gets hurt quite badly by what he perceives as her giving up, but actually is her taking control of what's going on in her life.
Right, yeah, and he's he gets hurt badly, but it's a good thing, you know, it needed to happen.
Yes, it did. It does need to happen. I mean, and in a way it's inevitable because, you know, she's smart enough to know that the medication isn't working and that she can either carry on with it for as long as she can or she can stop, and she chooses to stop, which is a tough decision to make.
Yeah.
A tough decision, indeed. And but it is very, very good. It is powerfully moving. It looks good. It's funny. I mean, it's amazing, actually, how funny it is. It manages to have gallows humour and not be tasteless at the same time.
Yeah, that's down to a good script,
presumably. The script is really good. Yeah, script is good. The cast are excellent. You know, all the way from the two leads, Nick Offerman is a great bit of casting as the dad, mm-hmm. who, you know, in the way that Ron Swanson can deliver a one-liner, you know, Nick Offerman can deliver those one-liners standing on his head.
Yeah.
And he does. So it is a very, very fine piece of work indeed.
Excellent. So, yeah, so far, I'm really keen to watch it.
Yeah.
It sounds like, yeah, that it just sounds like it would be very highly entertaining and uplifting and improving as well.
I think so. And I think the way that it manages to make you laugh, it made me laugh out loud at most of the jokes, in fact, maybe all of the jokes. And then, of course, it's very powerfully moving at the end, and it manages to walk that fine line without ever being sentimental.
Well, that's the concern. The concern is that it's exploitative, right? That it takes a subject that's obviously going to make you cry, and makes you cry, and it hasn't earned it. But it's, you know, it sounds like you feel it has earned.
Yeah, it absolutely does, and it would be very easy. You know, it's easy to make a sentimental film that you know, exploits your emotions. It's easy to make a film like that. Anybody can do that. What's hard to do is to make a film that's true and honest,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, shows you what life is like talking to someone who's got a terminal disease.
Yeah. Interesting as well. I think you described it at one point, or someone, no, I think Rotten Tomatoes described it as a coming of age film.
Yes.
It's interesting that you found it relevant and interesting at a later age than the character who features in it.
Well, yeah, I did, but I frequently find myself gravitating to movies that have like people of this kind of age group in, because I feel that they have a lot to say to people.
Mm-hmm.
What you're seeing here is someone discovering something. You know, although it says it's a coming of age movie, yeah, this is a coming of age movie in the same way that Stand By Me is a coming of age movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that I could watch until the cows come home, and that's got an almost universally very young cast in it. But it's not about how old the people are. It's about it's about the journey that they're going on.
Yeah, yeah, and that's what interests me, that it could be that as you get older than people that age, then what they're going through stops being relevant. But
But I think that you know, I will put a footnote on this to say that I've been through what Greg has been through in this film.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, my father had leukemia,
mm-hmm.
which is he actually has the same leukemia that Rachel has in the film,
mm-hmm.
and he made the decision not to have treatment anymore, mm-hmm. and I was very angry about it too, because I didn't know what else to feel about it.
Yeah.
But you know, in the years since then, I respect his decision enormously, mm-hmm. but at the time, I didn't.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, yeah, gosh, that makes it very
so
powerful. I mean, to some extent, you know, some coming of age movies are about, like, you know, starting to understand, like, what it's like to have relationships with girls or something. But this is a rather more universal topic.
It is. Yes, it is. And there's a little detail in there as well, in that he, you know, Greg has spent all of his time at college desperately trying not to get close to anybody.
Mm.
And because he starts to get close to Rachel, all of that stuff breaks down at college completely.
Right.
And it's suddenly noticed that he's become friendly with someone. And all of his carefully constructed stuff at college just falls apart.
So what does all that mean? Yeah, why is he avoiding relationships in the first place? And why does that all fall apart?
Well,
what's the theme of the film in this?
I think the theme is that you can't be a rock, you can't be an island, you can't isolate yourself from the world completely, and that you have to let the world in. Right. And of course, you know, as people know, you know, you can try to be a rock and you could try to be an island, but eventually you have to let stuff in, and when you let stuff in, it hurts you.
Yeah.
Which is why people don't want to let it in, but it's inevitable.
Yeah,
and that is part of life.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's a real vote of confidence from you that you've been through something that sounds very similar, and you felt it was authentic enough that it spoke to you.
Oh, I felt it to be absolutely true. Yeah, there was no. You know, there's never any sense of sentimentality. There's never any sense that you're being manipulated. What you're seeing is truth. You know, you're seeing someone say that they can't handle it anymore, and the other person being very angry. And that doesn't seem to be manipulative at all. It seems to be like a true thing that's going on.
Yeah, well, that's, yeah. That makes me think it's weightier than I first thought when you first described it.
And that's where it treads a fine line, and it does it with aplomb, mm-hmm. you know.
I don't mean by weightier, I don't mean boring. I just mean it has substance.
Well, it does have substance, and it treads that line between being a comedy and having these funny little movies that Greg and Earl make, these really funny short films that they make.
Yeah.
You know, we see some of the clips of them, and they are actually very good.
Mm-hmm.
So it has all of those things, but it also has a really serious undertone that it doesn't treat in a trite way. You know, it takes it all very seriously, which is refreshing in these days of snark and internet trolling and nobody, you know, hipsters basically not saying anything truthful or, you know, just saying stuff because it's what other people are saying. This film lays it all on the line. And that is unusual.
Right. And it sounds like someone wanted to make this film not just because they thought it would be funny.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Because they wanted to say something.
Yeah.
So I almost feel like my standard question's already been answered. You know, the question of what's this film for? Well, you've said it speaks the truth.
It speaks the truth, yeah.
That's enough.
Yeah.
And certainly, and if it can have the effects it's had on you, of you feeling that it's truthful to you in recounting an experience like yours, okay, then it's done its job.
And that's
already
a very important thing, I think, that, you know, people who've been through this kind of thing before will not find, well, I mean, I didn't find anything in this film that I thought was fake. Mm-hmm. Other people might do. But I didn't feel that it was, you know, taking the suffering of someone with leukemia and making it into an issue film. Mm, it's not that. Yeah. It's not that at all. And interesting, I'm just looking at the production information in the film. The screenplay was on the blacklist in 2012.
What's the blacklist?
It's the Hollywood blacklist, which is the best unproduced screenplays.
Oh, I see.
So it was one of the ones that you know, people were circling and wanting to make.
Right.
Yeah.
So did it win any Oscars or anything?
I'm just looking for awards. I don't think it did.
Oh, it doesn't sound like it was.
It won at Sundance. It won the Grand Jury Prize.
Well, didn't and the audience Eternal Award. Sunshine of the Spotless Mind do something at Sundance?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah, that seems more its place.
So it was nominated at three different things. The Casting Society of America, which is a festival, Sundance, and the Teen Choice Awards, which I've never heard of before.
They don't sound very good.
No, but Sundance...
teens are famous for making really poor choices.
Maybe it should say the Poor Teen Choice Awards.
That's just normal.
But yeah, Sundance, I think winning the Grand Jury and the Audience Award is... I think that's a mark of either quality or a film that you'll never want to watch. If it's Sundance,
quirky.
Yes.
It's got to be quirky, right? I think Being John Malkovich did well at Sundance as well.
Yeah, it's definitely got quirk. It is definitely heavily influenced by Wes Anderson and Michel Gondry and Spike Jonze. And those are all good things to be influenced by.
Yeah.
It's a very, very fine film. Seek it out, listener.
It sounds excellent. I shall seek it out.
Cool.
And then probably I'll watch it and think it's rubbish, and I'll tell you. But so I speaking of thinking things are rubbish, are we done with that? I think we're done with that film.
I think we are Thank done with you. That film. I think we need excellent. To wrap up soon, as it's a little bit late. But, okay. But go ahead. You want to say something.
So speaking of things being rubbish, so I've only seen Interstellar once, and I didn't like it, as we discussed.
Are you still bashing Interstellar?
But I did. I did listen to a podcast. Very strangely, a podcast that's generally about like God and art and science and stuff. But for some reason, for 1 week, they talked about Interstellar with barely any mention of God or art or science at all. There's a little bit of God at the end.
Okay.
It's the podcast is called The Liturgists.
Right.
Podcast. It's excellent. But anyway, this particular episode. Probably not one of the strongest episodes, but it was interesting to us because it was about Interstellar. And in particular, they spent almost the whole of the episode talking about the science of Interstellar.
Okay.
And the chap who's really into science said at the beginning how great he thought the science of Interstellar was. And I was like, well, yeah, but a lot of it was rubbish, though. And he then went through the film, talked about some of the things that weren't rubbish, and then talked in great detail about a lot of things that were complete rubbish and said, you know, said that they were complete rubbish. So how he got his opinion that it was somehow good from all these points that were obviously complete rubbish, I don't know. Anyway, I tried not to aim my criticisms in the science-y areas when I was criticizing Interstellar.
Yes.
But listening to that podcast did make me realize I did have some serious science-y problems with it as well.
Okay.
Like the stupid, you can't have that much gravity to have time shifting like that. You need so much gravity that it would be impossible for them to take off from that moon and fly away.
I think
again.
You need to let it go.
Yeah. Should we do another episode about Interstellar and how it's rubbish?
No. I'd like to talk about something else.
If we did that, I'd have to watch it again. I'm not sure I can do that.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
But I feel I should.
There's, on a related subject, Christopher Nolan's next project is going to be called Dunkirk. It's going to be about the evacuation of Dunkirk during the Second World War.
I don't look forward to that.
I do. I think as long as he shoots on IMAX, it'll be a bit good.
I don't think I should give him. He makes films that attempt to have some proper ideas in them. I should give him a break.
Yeah, because he, you know, if we look at the Dreck that gets released in the summertime,
Dreck
by people like Michael Bay. Here's a little story.
Yeah. Fair enough.
On a plane coming back from Miami. On the second leg of a journey that actually came from Peru originally. Get me twice. I tried to watch Transformers : what's the subtitle of it?
Should just be called Transformers :
Oh God, it's so bad that I can't remember. It's the one with the dinosaur robots in it.
Yeah, are you not asking the right person?
Age of Extinction. That's it. Transformers : Age of Extinction. I tried to watch
Transformers,
this
:
on a very, very long flight, and I couldn't get through it. Like 8 hours.
Did you like? You liked the original Transformers?
I liked. I quite liked the first one. Yeah, I think it's pretty good.
But isn't that also just the same as
no,
Transformers :
The first Transformers film is, you know, it's got some funny bits in it. Some of the fighty, smashy stuff is quite well staged. Shia LaBeouf isn't too annoying, and John Turturro is very funny.
I think I tried to watch the first Transformers and felt that I couldn't.
But on an 8 or 9 hour flight from Miami, I could not watch all of Transformers : Age of Extinction.
:
I just
that's bad.
I turned it off.
Yeah, we should encourage Christopher Nolan and stop criticising him. He should be given a free pass just for trying.
I think we should, you know, continue to criticise him, but we should say, no, keep going. Yes, exactly.
You tried.
Yes.
Well done. Next time.
Try harder.
To coin a phrase.
Yes. Is that it?
Yeah. Should we attribute that phrase?
Go on then.
That phrase comes from my taekwondo master when I used to do taekwondo. And I remember specifically saying to him once, I'm trying to do this particular kick and I don't seem to be able to get my foot in the right position. And he just said, try harder. And that's stayed with me.
It has. Yes, it has.
Perhaps that's something for you to think about, listener.
Yeah, maybe. That's it. That was me and Earl the Dying Girl. And on the way, we talked about Interstellar and Star Wars.
And stuff. And Wes Anderson.
And some other
too
things.
Much.
Yes. We want your correspondence.
We want it.
Yeah. Please. It's time to do some plugging.
Oh, I'd forgotten about the plugging. I was going to just sign
no,
off.
No, you can't sign off.
All right, go on. You plug.
Okay, I should plug. I present a radio show on Glastonbury FM 107.1 in the Glastonbury Street and Wells area of Somerset. Also available online. It's on Thursday evening at 6 o'clock, between 6 and 7. It's a movie review show with music. I review whatever movies I want and play whatever music I like. You might hate it or you might like it, but have a listen anyway. That's my plugging done.
It's very good. Glastonbury Street and Wells.
Yes.
That sounds like a sort of 300-meter long area of Glastonbury.
Yeah, it's a bit longer than that.
It's like a street.
Oh, Glastonbury
with a couple of wells on it.
Okay, no, there's commas between those three things.
So you can hear it if you stand in the middle of Glastonbury Street, you know, near the
Wells. Near the Wells, yeah, you can hear it playing, but nowhere else. You can't hear it anywhere else.
If you just put a cup to the glass of the studio, you can hear
it. Yeah, like a Womble phone.
Yeah, like that. I make videos about programming,
Go on, you can do it. YouTube. You can do it. Go on.
I make videos about programming on YouTube. All kinds of programming, like advanced and beginner. There's a thing on there where I teach you how to write a game in Python on the Raspberry Pi. It's hours of just watching me type in a program character by character.
There you go, listener. Does that sound exciting to you?
You're going
to
love it. When I say hours, I mean literally. There are hours of it. Because I tell you everything. You know, I don't assume that you know anything about programming at all.
Well, that's good. Because that would appeal to me because I know nothing about it.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing. It does actually appeal to some people, despite the fact that it's probably more boring than I've made it sound. I'm making a game. I and some friends now are making a game called Rabbit Escape, which is, it works on Android and it works on your computer as well. You can download it for free. You can make levels for it. You can join in with helping us make it better. We've recently added the ability for rabbits to hold umbrellas and float slowly down instead of splatting to the
ground. Oh, that's good. I like the sound of that.
They're called brollies.
Excellent. All right.
That's enough plugging.
On that bombshell.
But anyway, you can find links to this stuff, listener. Like, we're not just telling you about it. You can actually pursue this further by clicking on the About link on the Good Robot Andy's website. If in your favourite search engine, if you type in The Good Robot Andy's, which is what we are called, you'll find our website. If you click on the About link on the Good Robot Andy's page, you'll find links to all this stuff.
Yes.
You'll also find all the old podcasts there. You can subscribe on iTunes and that other thing.
Everything.
The links are on the page.
Everything. You know, there's no excuse not to listen, basically.
Yeah.
Well, there might be one. You might not like it, but by the by.
If you don't like it, give it another couple of podcasts.
Yeah. And actually, you should start with the later ones because the sound quality is much better. Work your way backwards.
Do that.
Yeah.
See you next time.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.